Welcome, everybody, and good afternoon for most of us, certainly those of us on the East Coast. It's about 2 o'clock. We're just about to start with Tricia. And before we do, and before I hand it off to her, I wanted to go over some basic session information for those of you who are just joining us. In general, all the webinars will be comprised of approximately a 4 to 5 minute presentation followed by 10 minutes of Q&A. As you're logging in as an attendee, you will find that you are muted. Please don't be alarmed. And this is mainly just so that our speakers can have a clear line for everybody else. If you have questions, you are more than welcome to submit those. On your GoToWebinar window, you should have a questions tab. You can feel free to ask those. And at the end of the 45 minutes or however long it takes, assuming that there's time, we will go ahead and ask those directly. And if not, certainly I'm sure that all the speakers, including Tricia, would be more than willing to answer those offline. One other question which has been asked a lot as far as slides and audio recordings, just so that everyone knows, slides and audio recordings of these sessions will be made available. I'm going to say roughly Tuesday, December 11th, just to give time for people to email them in and for it to be posted, etc., but they will be available. If you have registered for the webinar, which I'm assuming that you have, given that you're listening to this, you will receive an email notification with that kind of information. So at this point, I'm going to hand over the controls to Tricia to present, and while I'm doing so, I will read her bio very quickly. So Tricia is the Data Network and Translational Research Librarian in Ebling Library for the Health Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She's also a recent graduate, May 2012, with her Master's in Library and Information Science and Certificate of Advanced Studies in Digital Libraries from Syracuse University. She was awarded an eScience Fellowship to obtain her MLIS from Syracuse and the IMLS. While at Syracuse, she had the privilege of working with the Thermochronology and Tectonics Research Group of Syracuse University designing a data management system for their laboratory. And she also worked with collaborators from both Cornell University and Syracuse University on the study of U.S. funders and their data management plan requirements. The work done for this study became the basis for this paper and talk, Demystifying the Data Management Requirements of Research Funders. Tricia has also completed an internship with Vivo, a research collaboration tool designed by Cornell University, discovering ways to represent expertise for researchers. Prior to her career in librarianship, she was a scientific researcher at companies such as Bausch & Lomb and Kodak. With that, Tricia, I will unmute you, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Alex, and that was a wonderful introduction. I really appreciate it. So this talk... I want to say thank you to some of the folks, Kristen Birney in particular, who sort of introduced some of the data management concepts. But I would like to say that, in general, data management is really just about the data. So it's about how you're accessing that data, how you're storing the data, and how you're preserving the data. And this talk is really going to focus on the data management plan, which is something that's required by several funders. So when you're applying for a grant, you also need to think about what you're going to do with the data that comes out of that project and comes from that funding. So, to continue, oops, we went backwards. So this is just a picture of me, so you know who's talking. So the agencies that have funded the research are interested in data management projects that they have funded. Just as a little bit of a background, the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation are both U.S. funding agencies that have brought attention to the values of making publicly funded research openly available. The NIH started this with a data sharing policy that's been in place since March of 2003. And I just want to show you the wording from their policy. It says, applicants seeking $500,000 or more in direct costs in any year of the project period are expected to include a data sharing plan in their application stating how they will share the data and if they cannot share the data, why. The public access policy is effective for publications that have been accepted on or after April 7th, 2008. The policy ensures that the public has access to the published results of NIH-funded research at PubMed Central, a free digital archive of full-text biomedical and life science journal literature. NIH-funded investigators are required to enter into PubMed Central an electronic version of the final peer-reviewed manuscript upon acceptance for publication to be made publicly available no later than 12 months after the official date of publication. Just some of the policy specifics. They have to submit to PubMed Central the final peer-reviewed manuscript 12 months or earlier from the publication date. The author's final peer-reviewed manuscript, as defined by the final version accepted for journal publication on or after April 7, 2008, includes all modifications from the publishing peer review process and all graphics and supplemental material associated with the article. Institutions and investigators are responsible for ensuring that any publishing or copyright agreements concerning submitted articles reserve adequate right to fully comply with this policy. Applicants citing articles in NIH applications, proposals, and progress reports that fall under the policy were authored or co-authored by the applicant and arose from NIH support must include a PubMed Central ID or the NIH manuscript submission ID. And just to give you an idea, there's been very recently, since November 16th of this year, there has been an announcement, and I just switched over to the wording from that announcement. It says, in general, starting in the spring of 2013, the NIH will delay processing of non-competing continuation grant awards if publications arising from that award are not in compliance with the NIH public access policy. The award will, so what happens with this is your award, if you have a, if you're continuing funding with the NIH, it will not be processed. That application that you submit to continue the funding will not be processed until the recipients have demonstrated compliance. So the NIH started with, we would like you to submit into PubMed Central. It was a suggestion, and then it became a requirement. And now we're looking at, they are adding a consequence if you do not submit. So this is really up and coming, and it's very important, and it's something that I've been working on. In addition, there's some wording here for the NSF. They have a data management plan required for proposals submitted after January 17, 2011. Grantees must plan for data management sharing and products of research. The proposals must include a supplementary document of no more than 2 pages labeled data management plan. So if you can see my little cursor, this where it says plans for data management and down to the next bullet point, that is all of the information that they have on what their requirements are for data management plans. But just to give an idea, it says the supplement should describe how the proposal will conform to the NSF policy on dissemination and sharing of research results. This data management plan may include the types of data, sample, physical collection, software, curriculum materials, and other materials to be produced in the course of the project, the standards to be used for data, metadata format, and content, policies for access and sharing, including provisions for appropriate protection of privacy, confidentiality, security, intellectual property, or other rights or requirements, policies and provisions for reuse, redistribution, and the production of derivatives, and plans for archiving data, samples, and other research products, and for preservation of access to them. So data management requirements and plans are specific to the directorate, office, division, program, or other NSF unit. So this is the very general information that they have, but then each of the various units has, a lot of them have their own policy that's a little bit more specific and actually includes more information. So we're going to switch back to the presentation. So at this point, if you're receiving funding from either the NIH or the NSF, new research will be subject to these properties, to these policies, pardon me. As librarians and information professionals, we have focused on these two funders because they have set guidelines on how they would like the data resulting from their funding to be handled. And this talk really focuses on, while the NIH and the NSF are quite important as far as sort of setting the bar for funding agencies, they are not the only ones. They do provide a large portion of scientific funding at many institutions, but we want to actually look at some of the other funders. So this is a chart that you're looking at. I know it's kind of busy and there's a lot going on, but we're going to get to look at it a couple more times during the talk. And this work we reviewed and analyzed 22 data policies of 10 different funders, including two nonprofit funders. And we created this chart, which then became the basis for the article and then also the basis for this talk today. So, to provide a little background, efforts have been made to establish goals for data management. Groups began to form to discuss and provide guidance on data management. This image is actually from the Interagency Working Group on Digital Data, their 2009 report. At that meeting, there were 20 different federal agencies that were represented, and their goal was to develop a robust framework to accommodate the effective management of scientific data in order to maximize the return on investment of federally funded research. In addition, the Association of Research Libraries also put out a 2007 report, and in that, they recommended that the Association of Research Libraries develop programmatic efforts to inform librarians about issues in data-intensive scientific research. And since then, many reports and papers have been generated from this initiative. So, as Alex said, I'm originally from Syracuse University, where I got my MLIS. And as part of that, I was part of the eScience Fellowship Program, eScience Librarianship. Just to give you a little background on that, I was one of 8 students who was selected by my essay and my background. They were looking for people who had a scientific background in particular, and to have them study to become librarians and then sort of be a go-between between the researchers and the library. So that was the goal of that program. And as part of that program, we had projects that we did. And the work that came and became this data here was a project that I started with another student during the fall of 2010. And it was collected by myself, the other student, Allison Miner, and then it was analyzed by myself and Allison, and also Diane Dietrich, who's the physics and astronomy librarian at Cornell University. And this was all done under the advisement of Gail Steinhardt, who is also of Cornell University. Just to give you some reasons for the project, we wanted to gain a sense of the data management requirements facing researchers. We wanted to know what information and direction funders provide to applicants on how to fulfill data management requirements. And we wanted to present implications for libraries offering or seeking to offer data management guidance to researchers. So the funders that we selected were based on data from Cornell University's Office of Sponsored Programs. And this is information that comes from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where I am currently located. And when I first started here in August, I wanted to look and see, you know, what the makeup of the funders at this institution were. And so I compared the funders that we surveyed in our project with typical funders to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and it turns out that they are very similar. And so I feel confident that the funders that we're representing as part of this study would represent a large chunk of many funding agencies at many academic institutions. So, and then that's just a little blow up of what they have here at the University of Madison. So this all kind of started with information from the DCC, which is the Digital Curation Center out of the UK. And so we took the, they had started this study where they looked at various funders in the UK, and they had these criteria that they were comparing. And we said we would like to do that here for United States funders. So we took what they had done, and here's a little blow up of some of their criteria, and we embellished upon that and we expanded upon it. So these are the criteria that we looked at. Just to give you an idea, with the DCC study, they had a criteria called published outputs, and we took that and we made it into open access to publications, publication repository specified, and publication repository supported. And then we added some new concepts. We added a concept of, do they include a data embargo? Also, is there any information about data standards or metadata standards. Do they mention anything about how the data management plan should be, or how your data management should be funded, and methods of ensuring compliance? So if you do follow these procedures, you know, what are the consequences, if any? So our methods included, we did some website searches of the individual funders that we looked at, and we looked for keywords such as data sharing, data management, and data policy. And then we also looked directly at the grant submission requirements. So this is the key for that chart that you've seen a couple times, and we're going to look at it again. But I just want to give you a description of it. So there's going to be these three different colors, the blue, the light blue, and the white. The dark blue means that the criteria that we were looking at for that particular funder was well described. It's light blue, it was somewhat described, so maybe it was mentioned. And white was, it wasn't mentioned at all, it was not described. Again, similar, there's going to be R's, S's, and O's on the chart. The R was required, so that was something that the funder specified as being required. If it was suggested, maybe it was mentioned, but they didn't say it was a requirement. And if it was listed as an O, it was completely omitted. So we're looking at the chart again here. And again, it's very busy, but what I want you to really focus on is that there's not a lot of dark blue. There's not a lot of R's. There's a whole lot of white spaces and O's. And what that indicates to us is that while there are these criteria that really should be included into data management plans, and these are things that the funders should be providing guidance on, it's just at this point not mentioned. So we know we have a little bit of work cut out for us in terms of you know, how we guide our researchers as librarians. Okay, so this is some data that came out of the paper that was written, and there's a lot going on here. I'm not expecting you to read through all of these numbers, but just so you know, this is a percent of the total data elements addressed by the policy. So for example, the top here, the National Science Foundation, 53% of the data elements that we looked at, those criteria, were addressed by their policy. What I want you to really take from this slide here is that no single policy addressed all 17 of the elements that we were looking for. And 11 of the policies addressed fewer than half of the elements, including four funders that appear not to have any policy at all. And that includes the Environmental Protection Agency, down here had zero, the Office of Naval Research, the American Heart Foundation, and the Sloan Foundation. Several of the agencies investigated had multiple data policies, where you see here at the top, the National Science Foundation has their general policy, and then they have many policies that we looked at that are specific to a particular program or a particular division. So units within the policy had, within the agency had policies that could either supplement or supersede the agency-wide guidelines. The data elements most represented, we'll go back to the charts. So the data elements that are most represented in many policies pertain to general data management activities. So when you look at things here where it says, you know, did they have an organizational data policy? Are data plans in proposals, the time frame, access? These are more of the general categories you see. There's a lot of dark blue there. So these are things that were addressed. When it came to more specific things about access and preservation and publications, these were things that were oftentimes not well described. In terms of standards, the policies were not very prescriptive regarding standards for data and metadata. Half of the unit-specific policies required that data be in standard formats, and none of the agency-wide policies required that data be in standard formats. So that was something that they didn't even address. In terms of access and preservation, our data suggests a greater emphasis on access to research data than on preservation. Both access and preservation were mentioned quite frequently as requirements for PIs in the policies, but policy documents often had better explanations for how to execute access requirements than preservation requirements. To give you an idea of what that looked like, when they're talking about access in the policy, that was well described about a little bit over half the time, but preservation was well described only over a quarter of the time. So, you know, access was much more well described than preservation. With regard to publications, little guidance is available on open access to publications, and very few policies even address ensuring that the publications are freely available. Where mentioned in the policy, only half specified a potential repository. NIH, of course, is the exception to this with their PubMed Central that they have available. So, as I mentioned, this data was collected in the fall of 2010. So you can imagine, well, where are we now? What about some new policies that may have come into play since I collected this data? So in October, I looked for some new policies, and lo and behold, the National Science Foundation has had some new directorates or directorates that have put in new policies, and you see that those are labeled in red there with new. So that was great to see. And I was concerned about the APA, to be perfectly honest. I thought, well, gosh, why don't they have any reference to data management at all in their policies? And so I followed up with them. I actually was able to speak to somebody who's working on those data management plan requirements as we speak. She was great to talk to, and she told me that currently they're working on internal policy development, so things that apply just to people that work for the EPA, but they still don't have any requirements for grant applicants or people that would then accept grants. So, but she said that that's something that they're looking forward to working on. In addition, there was also another study that came out around the same time as our paper came out of London, and it was funder requirements for data management and sharing. And this is the information about that. This, again, focused mostly on UK funders, but there were some international funders that I thought I would mention a little bit. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they require a data access plan, must be prepared for grants over $500,000. The Wellcome Trust, they have a policy that states the data management sharing plan is required for applications to the Trust's biomedical sciences and medical communities funding streams if the project will produce data outputs that have value to the research community in short and long term. Data should be maintained in a secure environment for a minimum of 10 years. So I thought that was important to point out that the Wellcome Trust is really, not only are they saying, yes, you need to be aware of this and you need to plan for it, but we are requiring it in a secure environment for 10 years. The World Health Organization, they have data management requirements that vary. They describe a little bit about the research life cycle within their proposal, and grant proposals are expected to describe the technical and practical activities associated with data cleaning, monitoring, and verification. So they are looking forward to it and moving towards data management requirements. So I use this image, it's images of trains, because this is kind of how I see the landscape of data management requirements. So there's large gaps in policy between data management goals and implementation realities. So they have these grant, these ideas about, well, you should definitely have these elements in your data management plan, but then they don't go about describing how you should include that, what the wording should be. They don't really give you any guidance on how to go about that, so I feel like it's kind of confusing. So, and often the policy requirements are often vague. The funding is an area of concern for many PIs, yet only 8 policies addressed how data management may be funded by an award. So that's of concern. I know that that's come up in my work here at the UW, so it's something that I think that the funders should definitely be looking towards. Guidance is needed in specific data management areas, such as data preservation, data standards, and metadata standards. However, data policies infrequently mention these areas, if they are mentioned, again, they are also very vague. Data access. Funders need to indicate suitable data centers or repositories, preferably funder-supported data repositories And what I mean by that is, yes, there's a lot of data centers, data repositories that are out there. There's a lot that are specific to a particular discipline, and those are all great. But if you notice, there's some repositories that have been here and are now gone. So we need to have something that's going to be here and stay here if you're going to put all of the work and effort into putting it into a repository. So that's why I think the funders should definitely support the data repositories so that you can be assured that your data will stay. With regard to data sharing, researchers may not oppose sharing data with others if they are first allowed sufficient time to analyze it themselves. This is something that is of concern. If you talk to any of your researchers, they say, "Oh, I don't want to share my data. I don't want to be scooped. I don't want somebody to take my information and come up with some phenomenal idea, and I didn't really get a chance to work on it." So if the policies allow for data embargoes and say that there's a certain period of time where we understand that you are going to share, but you'll share a little bit further down the line and you've had a chance to look at it and work with it. So I think that data sharing would be much more understood and used by researchers if data embargoes were mentioned in the policies. With regard to compliance, data management requires a great deal of time and planning to do it well. Without incentives or mandates, it can be difficult to justify the time spent on it. So I'm glad to see that the NIH is finally stepping forward and saying, if you don't comply, there will be consequences. But to be honest, with most of these data management plans, they're really just guidelines, and they're not requiring any sort of compliance, and there aren't any consequences. And so researchers aren't really feeling that they need to spend the time and effort to do this because there really aren't any consequences. So that's something that should be in place with these policies. And funders will increasingly require that researchers make explicit their plans for managing research data with regard to storage, preservation, and access. So some funders in this whole process may be prescriptive, and others may be ambiguous about how grant applicants can satisfy the data management requirements. So as librarians, we need to have an understanding of what these funders are requiring, and so that we can best advise our researchers. So I see with strategies for data management plans, I give you the image of the Post-its because we need some organization and clarity in the confusion surrounding data management plan requirements. And I hope to give you just a couple here. My top line says, be as detailed and concise as possible. I know that might sound kind of contradictory, but if you remember, the NSF plan requires only 2 pages to describe how you're going to do this. But there's a lot of things that they want you to describe in there. So just try and be very concise and pack as much detail in those plans as you possibly can. You want to talk about the description of the project in that plan, the purpose of the research, and the organizations and staff that are going to be involved in that project, the description of the data to be collected. So you want to talk about the nature of the data and also the format of the data, with standards to be applied for formats and metadata and those types of things. We want plans for short-term storage and data management. So while you're collecting that data and during the course of the project, what's happening to the data? How is it being stored? How is it then going to go into a preservation mode after you're done with it? These are things that you want to think about. So how are you going to, from the beginning, take that data and move it along the process of the data management lifecycle? Legal and ethical issues, especially intellectual property, these are things that you definitely want to address in your data management plan. Access policies and provisions, particularly information about data embargoes, the time frame that you're going to use to provide that data, and publications. And this is my little plug for open access. I know not everybody is as supportive as open access, particularly in some of the sciences, but open access, if you have the opportunity to publish in an open access journal, I strongly suggest it. I understand that they are not always the most prestigious journals, but in moving forward in the data sharing environment, I just think it's very important. So that's my little plug, and I hope that you'll think about it. Provisions for long-term archiving and preservation. Need to plan for where is that data going to go after you're done with the project. Is that going to be in a repository or maybe a data center? That was something I mentioned a little bit earlier. And who is assigned the data management responsibilities? Who is going to be the responsible party? And how are you going to have compliance be monitored and ensured over time? So if you're working with a bunch of grad students and then they all graduate, you know, who's going to maintain the data after that? So just as an example, so you need to think about long-term, where is that data going to go and who's going to be responsible? So like I said, all of this information is based on a paper that was written, and it's in the Issues in Science and Technology Librarianship. This is a little image from that main page, and I really strongly encourage you to look at it because while I gave you a lot of information that was in the article here today, there's a lot more information, and you can actually look at the chart and look at the trends and think about it. And so I really encourage you to check it out. It's the most recent issue of the ISTL. And I guess I'm a little under my talk time, but this is my reference page, and then my contact information is over there in the right-hand corner. And I guess I went through that a little bit quickly, but I'd be happy to take questions and answer any questions that you might have about, you know, the talk, about data management in general, really anything I'd be happy to answer.
At this point, for those who are attending or who are listening in, if you have any questions, you can go ahead and type those into the question box. And as a reminder, for those who want the slides, they will be available as well an audio recording of this event. At this point in time, Tricia, we don't have any questions.
Okay.
However, should anyone have questions, your contact information is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we pronounce your last name correctly?
Adamus.
Adamus. It's adamus@wisc.edu.
Mm-hmm.
So you can contact Tricia directly for that. It was fantastic, and thanks for taking the time to provide it at this point. For those who are attending, you've got half an hour back until Deb Hunt comes on at 3 o'clock. So thanks again, Tricia.
Thank you.